Good morning, everyone. This is Renee Rentmeester with the Cooking Without Looking TV show. Today, we have someone who's very special. We have President Rick Abono from the National Federation of the Blind. How are you this morning, President Rick Abono?
Oh, I'm doing great, Renee. Thank you very much. And feel free to call me Mark. It's okay.
Okay. All right, Mark. Thanks. Well, basically what I wanted to talk to you about is tell me a little bit about yourself. Were you blind from birth? Tell me about yourself.
Sure. Well, I grew up in the great state of Wisconsin, and I have aniridia and glaucoma. I was diagnosed at age 5. At age 5, I was legally blind. Effectively, I've been blind all my life, but I had a significant amount of usable vision when I was a little kid and progressively lost that vision because of glaucoma, especially. I had every flavor of glaucoma surgery that existed in the 1980s.
And, wow.
By the time I got to eighth grade, I lost all the vision in my left eye from glaucoma surgery, and really don't have much vision to write home about in my right eye, a little bit of light perception. But when I was in college, I met the National Federation of the Blind, and I learned that I didn't have to rely on my unreliable vision, that there were techniques I could use. And I met blind friends who taught me how to use non-visual techniques, and that they were reliable, and that they allowed me to not worry about what I did or didn't see, but to rely on my own confidence and abilities to go out and live the life I wanted. So although I've been blind all my life, I really have only recognized myself as a blind person for the last 25 years or so.
Well, that's interesting. Well, you know what? I didn't know this about you, but I'm from Wisconsin too. I'm from Green Bay. What city are you from?
Excellent. I'm from Milwaukee, the south side of Milwaukee. So I know Green Bay well.
Ah, and we used to travel to Milwaukee every single summer to see the zoo. We love the zoo in Milwaukee. So that's amazing. I didn't realize you were from Milwaukee. What are some of the things that you'd like sighted people to know about people who are blind or visually impaired?
Well, teaching the sighted, the non-blind public, as I like to call them, about blind people,
I like that,
is a big part of what we do. And, the first thing that people should know is that blindness is not the characteristic that defines us or our future. And blind people have all of the same aspirations, dreams, hopes as sighted people. And that the biggest barrier we face is not blindness, but it's actually the public misunderstanding about blindness, as well as the artificial barriers that society puts in our way. And so we want people to think differently about blindness and the capability of blind people. And that's why, by the way, we use the word blind to describe anybody with significant vision loss. We don't try to create a hierarchy based on how much people can see. And we also want to flip the understanding. A lot of people talk about accommodations that blind people need, but hardly anybody talks about the fact that in public buildings today, one of the biggest expenses we have is lighting. Now, the lighting's not there for blind people. It's there for sighted people because they don't know how to operate effectively in the dark. So we spend a lot of money on lights, but we don't call that an accommodation, right? We don't call that an accommodation. It's just thought to be a thing we do. Well, it's an accommodation for sighted people. At least that's how we think about it in our building, because blind people don't have any problem moving about the building in the dark. So I think what I want non-blind people to know is that the best way to really understand blindness is to put aside what you believe a blind person needs, or how you would think you would operate as a blind person, and talk to blind people about it. Ask the questions. You know, in some ways we get tired of talking about blindness, so don't just talk to us about blindness, but we'd rather ask the questions. And by the way, don't just ask one blind person. You got to get to know 10, 20, 50 blind people. How many you know, blind people do you really know? To get to know what that baseline is. Because, you know, Mark Riccobono may tell you how he does something as a blind person, but when you get to know a number of blind people, you get to understand what the normal level is. And that includes, you know, really getting to know people who have adjusted to their blindness and are living with it effectively. Obviously, when people are newly blind, they're struggling to understand that as well, and they're not in the position yet to really educate you on how blind people as a class effectively deal with blindness. And then, you know, the thing I would say is look for those opportunities to help elevate the perspective of blind people. As a non-blind person, your voice carries weight in terms of making sure that accessibility is built in to our society and that blind people aren't artificially kept out of opportunities.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions that people have about blindness?
Oh, gosh. Well, could spend a lot of time on this.
Let me count the ways, right?
Yeah, you know, I guess the first thing is, you know, a real misconception that blind people are inherently in danger because they can't see what's happening around them. A lot of people look at a blind person and they automatically assume that that blind person needs help. What do I mean? Well, I was walking down the street with one of my friends about a week ago, and it was, I think it was a weekend morning or something, and a lady said to my friend, hey, your shoe's untied, can I help you tie it? Now, you know, my friend is a young professional, confident, blind individual, not a child. You know, I just wouldn't think to go up to anybody on the street who's an adult and ask them if I could help them tie their shoe. What is it about a blind person that makes it okay to ask that question? Now, you know, there are sighted people, I mean, I've observed it, who walking around all the time don't recognize their shoes untied, and someone says, hey, you know, your shoe's untied. They don't offer to tie the person's shoe.
I'm currently raising my hand, by the way.
Yeah, you know. So there's a basic assumption that, oh, blind person needs help. And that's no matter what, whether it's crossing a street. I mean, so many things. The default assumption is blind person needs help. And that causes so many problems. I think the other misconception that closely relates, and it's something that I really dislike, is that there's a general assumption that the best way to help a blind person is to grab them and steer them where you think they should go.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, one beautiful thing about the pandemic is I haven't been in an airport in, let's see, this is September, so it's going to be 7 months on Friday. I I mean, it's amazing, but airports are the worst. I mean, when I walk into an airport as a blind person, and I can be, wearing a suit, dressed for a business trip, walking confidently, but people in the airport, they take personal privilege to grab me, push me, pull me like I'm a piece of luggage,
God.
and it doesn't. What happens is, and I always say the same thing to people. I always try to say, please don't grab me. And I try to say it as calmly as I can. And some people get really offended, like, oh, I was, just trying to help you, as though that made it okay to just start grabbing me. If I walked up to somebody in an airport and just grabbed them,
That's frightening.
I would not. Nobody would think that was okay. So there's a general assumption that we need help. There's a general assumption that we're just not aware. And I think there's a general misunderstanding that as blind people, there are just things we can't do. And shouldn't do. And what we're trying to do in the National Federation of the Blind is change that and tell the stories of blind people and make it a normal part of society that blind people are part of and full participants in the society that we have.
Getting back to that, walking through an airport and someone grabs you, oftentimes I've had to go to schools or give speeches or whatever, and I try to make it a point to someone, like, just imagine if you were calmly walking down the street and all of a sudden someone grabbed you by the shoulders and turned you around or did something. You know what, Mark? I would be screaming bloody murder. Like, what are you doing to me?
Yeah. Yep. It's a problem, and it's frankly it contributes to why a lot of blind people feel uneasy about going out and traveling independently because they get that treatment. And so we in our organization work a lot on helping blind people understand that they're not broken. That it's not the blindness that's the problem, it's the public attitudes. And, we have to learn how to deal with those public attitudes and how to continue to work to change that perspective.
And you guys do a great job. Now, how has the pandemic affected you and the organization?
Well, organizationally, the National Federation of the Blind is very strong. Our organization, being a people's movement, one of our values, I guess, is resilience, but also pulling together when times are uncertain or difficult. And our members across the country. And we have affiliates in all of the 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico, have stepped up and pulled together in the way that you would expect if you have come to know our organization. First and foremost, we started putting together virtual events and opening up those virtual events to anybody who is blind, whether they're a member or not. We activated our advocacy and policy team to be watching and advocating in DC for blind people as it relates to COVID relief in the Congress, and then educating blind people about what seemed like the constantly changing rules for a while there around economic stimulus payments and what was going to happen to various programs. The details seemed to be changing constantly for a while there, and our team was monitoring that and sharing information with our advocacy network. We put together a whole network of activities by giving our affiliates access to the Zoom platform. And a lot of our local chapters and affiliates put together local relief efforts to really help blind people who needed it the most, you know, blind people that didn't have a way to get groceries or needed to figure out a way to go get tested when, you know, testing was not easily available. And that includes advocacy, you know. These drive-up testing centers started popping up, and we were first on the scene to say, well, that's great if you have a car, but there are a lot of people that don't have cars. And not just blind people, lots of people. How are they going to get access, and what is the plan for this? Because it's not acceptable to say testing is available to those who can drive. And, you know, Uber and Lyft is telling you, you know, gives you a warning when you pull it up. If you have COVID symptoms, don't take a ride. So, you know, we worked both on the personal level, connecting blind people, and the advocacy level. So what I like to refer to as connecting and protecting were our activities. When I say protecting, I mean in a civil rights sense, not in a custodial sense, really protecting our rights and expanding them. And then, you know, a huge part of what we've been doing in the pandemic is protecting voting. You know, we told states a year ago that they needed to prepare for the 2020 election and making sure that blind people had access to all of the voting methods. And lo and behold, the pandemic came about. Everybody started running to mail-in voting systems. And, well, none of them, frankly, did any planning for how blind people were going to be included. So we're very aggressively working right now in 17 states on voting matters and providing technical assistance to many others. So when you say, well, what was the impact of the pandemic? I mean, I would say our organization over the last 7 months has been as busy, if not busier, than ever. We've been fortunate that we've worked pretty hard to keep all of our staff employed and actively engaged in the work of the organization. During this time, we've been able to re-engineer a lot of our activities. And, you know, we had a national convention that had, you know, close to 10,000 participants in it, the largest gathering of blind people anywhere.
I'm not blind, but I've gone to other NFB conventions. But as I mentioned a little earlier before we started the call, I thought it was tremendous. I truly enjoyed it. I mean, it took me a moment or two to figure it out, but then I'm like, wow, this is wonderful. I learned a lot, and it was going from room to room, and I just kept thinking, wow, these guys are geniuses. How did they do this?
You know, I mean, basically, it's, again, relying on the wisdom of blind people in the people's movement, really, really quite critical. Now, you asked personally, though, you know, it's been interesting for me having to lead an organization at this time. Certainly, I've done and dealt with things in the last 7 months I never would have imagined I would deal with. And at a personal level, you know, working from home for a time and being a husband, a father of three kids, trying to help steer them through virtual learning at the same time. And my two daughters are blind, so dealing with accessibility on the personal front, you know, it's been very challenging. You know, dealing with, you know, being isolated from friends and colleagues, you know, is challenging. I've tried to step up my game to take care of myself. So since May 12th, I've gotten my 10,000 steps every day, except for July 18th, which was the last day of our convention. I was on my feet most of that day, but I did not get my 10,000 steps that day. And, you know, doing more cooking, by the way, working on sourdough experiments like most of the rest of the America, and making pasta, and, you know, eating dinner at home every night with the family, which, you know, has really been great. So, Like with anything else, I have personally tried to make as much positive out of the situation we've been in, and there's been a lot of joy that's come from that.
That's really good to hear. Well, speaking of cooking, Mark, what do you have like a favorite recipe right off the top of your head that you like to that you enjoy with your family during this time?
Oh, well, that's a tough one. Of course, I've been working on making pasta, homemade pasta. I don't know if I have a favorite recipe yet. I'm still playing around with different recipes. I guess one thing I would offer, I'm a baseball fan, and I typically at the beginning of the baseball year make something that I call baseball bars, which basically consist of all good things: peanut butter, chocolate, butterscotch, peanuts, a little bit of vanilla,
Oh gosh.
and quick cooked oats, all mixed together. It's a little more complicated than that, and then baked into these bars that you can cut up and serve. And I usually do that at the beginning of the baseball year, but of course baseball started later this year, so I did make them in April, even though baseball didn't happen then.
Are you a
And that's
Brewers fan?
I'm a Brewers fan, absolutely. They're struggling a little bit at the moment, but
Well, that's okay. As Wisconsinites, we're used to like the teams, being a little down and out and bringing it on at the very end of the season. Are you a
there you
Packers fan,
go.
by the way?
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's the
Was my
state
tough
religion,
question.
you know?
That's
That's the state
right. That's right.
religion.
Well, as someone who comes from Green Bay, I think I would have been kicked out if I didn't like the Packers. So. And I still even.
the interesting thing about that is, I have never been to Lambeau Field. I've been outside of Lambeau Field. I've never been to
No.
Lambeau Field. And I actually worked, when I was younger, I was an usher at County Stadium in Milwaukee, and the Packers used to play three of their home games in Milwaukee. So I actually was an usher in October 1992 at a Packers Eagles game in Milwaukee. It was Brett Favre's first game with the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, wow.
So that's my closest Packer connection, but I've never been to Lambeau Field, so that's still on
Well,
my bucket
Mark,
list.
here's a secret between you and me. I was actually a Packer cheerleader for 4 years.
That right?
And we did, as cheerleaders, we did go to the Milwaukee games. Well, one Milwaukee game a year, and we had a good time. My family home was blocks, I'm telling you, blocks away from Lambeau Field. When before I was a cheerleader, we could open my bedroom window and hear the entire game from Lambeau Field.
Nice.
So. We probably even have met each other somewhere. No, I'm just teasing. Well, it's funny because sometimes I'm down here in right now in Georgia, and people find out I'm from Green Bay. Oh, do you know so and so? And so sometimes I know, actually, honestly, Mark, I know more people who are blind than I know sighted people. I basically think that. So if there's a blind person, someone will go, "Well, do you know them?" Like, no. But no, so that's really wonderful. Those bars sound amazing.
Yeah,
Well,
so
do you have,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, you go ahead, no problem.
I was just going to say, so I enjoy cooking, but I don't take enough time to cook, and the pandemic's been kind of good in that regard because it's pushed me to do a little more cooking.
Yes. Well, what is what's on the horizon for the NFB at this point?
Well, It's September, so we still have 2 more months to push on voting, and we're, you know, also, by the way, encouraging all blind people to vote. We're a nonpartisan organization, so we don't offer an opinion about who you should vote for, but we think you should vote. We want all blind people to vote, and we want to provide technical assistance to make sure that blind people vote, and we're going to have a blind voters survey, which we have had in every presidential election for the last 12 years or so, so that blind people can log their voting experience, good or bad, by the way, so that we can continue to use that data to push policymakers on improving access to voting. So that's a big thrust for us right now. We're working with our state affiliates on having their fall conventions be virtual, and we're continuing to provide guidance to members of our organization about virtual meetings and continuing the business of the organization. There's a lot of advocacy work still to do, and there's a lot of need to connect blind people with resources at this time. How do you deal with all these new online sites that we now have to contend with to order groceries, or you know, a lot of places they won't take your call anymore. You have to put an order in online. So how do we contend with that, and how do we continue to move accessibility online in a powerful way? We're working a lot with students and families as schools have been virtualized. You know, there's a lot of accessibility barriers in the technology out there, and although we've been saying for well over a decade that schools need to be building accessibility into their technology programs, they haven't been doing it, and now it's hitting them square in the face. So, you know, we're working on both the advocacy side, but then also helping families just work through the situation, because, you know, we can sue a school district today about accessibility, but that's not going to help solve the problem for many years down the road. So we need to get families some resources, some mentoring to get through the situation. So continuing this notion of connecting and protecting. And, you know, by the way, I would encourage any of your listeners who are blind to join the National Federation of the Blind. We would love to have you as a member. You can go to nfb.org and go to the Join Us tab and get information about that. You know, as a people's movement, we rely on having a diverse cross-section of blind people who power this movement. And that's another thing we're working heavily on, is making sure that within our movement we are exercising sound practices and having the difficult conversations about social justice, diversity, how we operate our organization in a way that promotes the diversity within our organization. So these are all things we're working on, and we're sure that whatever the outcomes are in November, that we're going to have an aggressive policy agenda to promote in Washington, D.C. in the next Congress. So we're working on putting that together. So these are all things we're working on, and, you know, continuing to find ways to get communications out to a more broad and diverse cross-section of blind people, and to build this civil rights movement we have, which, you know, really leads the way in the world in terms of connecting blind people together.
Definitely, definitely. Well, Mark, I appreciate it. And how about that address again for the nfb.org?
Sure. So it's NFB, as in National Federation of the Blind, .org. Go to our website. You can find tons of information. By the way, we have also something like, I don't know, 500 listservs, email listservs. You can find those at nfbnet.org. Again, another great resource for connecting people together. You can find us on Twitter at nfb_voice, and you can search for National Federation of the Blind on Facebook. Find us, connect with us. We'd love to help you out and bring you into our Federation family, as we say.
It's a great group of people. I've been there, met lots of people. Very nice organization, very enjoyable. Well, Mark, I've really enjoyed meeting you, and especially since you're another Wisconsinite. Hey, it was wonderful. That was extra special. So
Well,
this has been Renee. I'm sorry, Mark.
I was just going to say, I hope we can get together for some beer and brats soon.
Oh my God, that sounds so amazing right now. Well, thank you so much. This has been we've been interviewing President Mark Riccobono, National Federation of the Blind. This is Renee Rentmeester. I'm the creator and executive producer of the Cooking Without Looking TV show and podcast. Our website is www.cookingwithoutlooking.wordpress.com. I'm sorry, cooking without looking tv.wordpress.com, and have a wonderful day. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.